There's a fresh story from England. Workers are sick of robots taking their jobs. So, they're starting to fight back. How? With sabotage. I like that. I like that a lot.
The Safari Park.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry, fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Come on, Larry. Larry.
Sabotage is a French word, of course, rooted in their word for shoe, which is sabot. And one version of its origin is the act of throwing one's shoe into the machinery. No, I did not have to look that up online. I learned that definition as a high school kid, where I found the idea of sabotage extremely attractive, almost sexy, to be honest. The high school I attended was very authoritarian, very rigid, with emphasis on the group, the community, as opposed to the individual. Individuality was not highly prized. And even back then, groupthink did not sit well with me. If you think about it, sabotage is a resource of the powerless. It's what slaves and subjects and employees and sometimes kids, those with little or no voice or recourse, resort to when conditions become intolerable. If you can't win a confrontation with them face to face, you can always fuck up their shit. Surreptitiously. Sabotage is fun. It's fantastic book and movie fodder. The Guns of Navarone was a sabotage mission. The Dirty Dozen. James Bond is a supremely skilled saboteur. He never puts a bullet in Blofeld. He always finds a way to foil his evil plans with sabotage. When I think about it, I've been something of a saboteur at times in my life. It started in school, in grammar school, which was a fairly hellish place. In first grade, I was in sort of vapor lock. I was utterly unprepared for the level of gloom, intimidation, and violence that was endemic at that school. I chronicled that way back in episode 5, Larry Slugs a Nun. You'll find that in the January 2017 tab at thatlarryshow.com. But by the time I got to second grade, I began to acclimate, to realize that while I might not be able to upend authority, I could still put a bug up their ass, show them they were not invincible. One of my first and simplest acts of sabotage was really quite inspired. The nun was a thick-wristed termagant. She taught catechism, the Baltimore Catechism specifically, which was a collection of rote call-and-response propaganda that J.C. would have used to light bonfires for his many fish fries on the beach at Galilee. I'd already had a belly full of catechism from first grade, gotten a B+, and I was not interested in catechism part 2. So to thwart her efforts to assault us with more boredom, one day, I snuck into the classroom early, collected all the chalk and all the erasers, and then chucked them out a window. Once the nun arrived, class was delayed several minutes as she searched the room for a writing implement. Then she had to send a kid to the supply room at the other end of the school, and he had to explain the situation to whichever drone was guarding it, and get them to unlock the door, issue the chalk and erasers, sign some kind of logbook, then haul ass back to class with the necessary supplies. All of which ate up, 10, maybe 15 minutes of class time. Of course, the nun was ripshit and her foam-at-the-mouth lecture about stealing not only the chalk and erasers, but her time and the time of all the children who were thirsting for more catechismic knowledge. Is that a word? Who gives a crap? Her diatribe probably consumed another 10 or 15 minutes of class time. When she was finally equipped and sufficiently calm to teach catechism, it was time for another class. I could barely contain my laughter. And take it from me, the best laughter of all is suppressed laughter. In a classroom, a courtroom, a funeral parlor, a police station, any place that pompous authority figures gather to pontificate and exert their will. That's the best place to cut up and then try not to laugh. I told no one of my sabotage. I impressed the hell out of myself. I felt a rush of success and achievement. My stealth wowed even me. I think that by second grade, I had not yet seen a James Bond movie, but on some primitive, visceral level, I felt like 007. Cool, self-satisfied, slick. Of course, I had to repeat this sabotage, but I also knew, again, only at an instinctive level, not to commit sabotage with any regularity. I'd never heard the phrase pattern recognition, but I knew that whatever I did had to be sporadic, random, and therefore unpredictable. No traps could be set. So, I waited a week or two, snuck into the class again, made sure nobody saw me enter, scooped up all the chalk and erasers, and flipped them out an open window. Before I exited, I looked up and down the halls, and then I darted out of that room. Schools are wallpapered with surveillance cameras now, but they were not then, so being recorded was not a consideration. The kids filed back into the room, took their assigned seats. Everybody had assigned seats. Then the nun walked in, started talking catechism. After a while, she moved away from her desk toward the blackboard. Ooh, I was waiting for this moment. She looked at the empty shelf where chalk and erasers should have been. Then she just froze with her back to the class. God, I wanted a belly laugh. And I wanted to see her face. What rictus of rage contorted it? If only that chalkboard had been a mirror so we could see. I was biting holes in the inside of my cheeks in an effort to hurt myself so much I could not smile. I knew she was in a psychotic rage. She stood still for so long it became uncomfortable. Some bold kid sussed out the problem and said, "Uh-oh." She whirled around like a dervish and hissed,
"Who said that?"
That very foolish kid timidly raised his hand. Well, she marched down the aisle like a stormtrooper, smacked that kid's face so hard she nearly knocked him off his seat.
"You think that's funny? Go to the principal's office."
Instantly, the kid was weeping with a handprint on his face so red it could have been painted by lipstick. He staggered out of the room.
"But sister, I didn't do anything."
She looked around the room. She said that whoever had been stealing the chalk and erasers had better stand up now, or he'd get worse than that smart mouth kid just had. Well, I had a perfect poker face because I was coming from truth. I hadn't stolen anything. I'd merely relocated it. Nobody moved. She walked backwards until she was at the front of the class again. Then she pulled another nutcase move. Like some wind-up toy, she stepped and stopped beside every kid in the class, commanding they look at her. If they didn't lock eyes with her, she'd grab their face in one beefy hand and force them to. I thought, shit, if I laugh now, I'm dead. This was the crowning comedic achievement of my young life, but I didn't want to die or be disfigured for it. So again, I'd never read Papillon or Count of Monte Cristo or had any inkling of mind-focusing techniques I would learn and deploy years later. But I just knew, if I failed to train my brain on some other subject, some alternative vision, I'd smirk or chuckle, and that would be sufficient evidence of guilt for her to knock my teeth out. Now, at that time, one of my friends had just lost his dad. We all went to pay our respects. The guy was laid out in an open coffin. It was a sobering view, my first ever of a stiff. I pasted that dead guy up on the billboard of my mind, and when she came to my desk and stopped and stood, I turned my face up and met her gaze. But what I saw was a waxy-faced, bald dead guy on a creamy satin pillow. She moved on. There were over 50 kids in that classroom. I guess none of them looked guilty. So this time she went to the class next door to borrow some chalk and an eraser. Well, I thought this was the funniest shit of all time and space, so of course I had to repeat it. So I scanned a calendar, trying to figure the proper interval. How long until she relaxed, let her guard down, figuring the face slaps and threats and Vulcan mind melds had intimidated the culprit into terror and capitulation. I found the perfect day, the Monday after the long Thanksgiving weekend. By the way, I think I just realized why One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is one of my favorite movies and why I so closely identified with Randall P. McMurphy. She was a lot like Nurse Ratched, and that school was like an asylum. The gloom was palpable. Red brick exterior and inside, dimly lit hallways with ancient cracked linoleum floors. Ass-punishing desks carved up over the years by bored and angry kids. You had to back papers with a notebook or your pencil would punch through. The sickly glow of fluorescence overhead, complete with that incessant low buzz they say makes you crazy over time. Monochromatic, gray walls, darker gray chalkboards, rough wooden floors. A solitary crucifix above the blackboard. I don't think it was put there to signal redemption. It was a reminder that you were here to suffer. The soundtrack of the place was either the drone of kids repeating multiplication tables or prayers. Oh, Hail Marys and Our Fathers, decades of them. They creep me out. About the only positive thing I can say about it was that by the end of second grade, I could read, write, add, subtract, multiply, and divide, which is really all you need, I guess. The only nod to childhood in that room was the strangest item near the door was a working Kit Kat clock. I would stare at that thing endlessly as the eyes and tail moved side to side, willing it to speed up and make 3 p.m. arrive early. It never did. But it made a big impression on me. That Kit Kat clock symbolized escape. Even now, there are two of them running here at the Take No Shit Dojo. Mondays always suck. But Mondays following a four-day, fun-filled weekend like Thanksgiving, they're just too grim to bear without some levity. I figured I would again chuck the chalk and erasers, but something, and I don't recall what, slowed me down, and I did not have sufficient time to pull the job. Being artful and a careful saboteur, I scrubbed the mission. Tomorrow's another day, right? So I entered the class with all the other kids. I was about in the middle of the pack. When I got in the room, some idiot was just flinging the chalk and erasers into the trash can. A moron copycat. For a split second, I felt pissed off, but imitation is one price of brilliance and innovation, is it not? A few kids snickered and laughed. We all took our seats. Then Sister Hitler walked into the room. She scanned the shelf at the base of the blackboard. She took a breath. But before she could exhale flame, some girl's hand shot up and she ratted out the copycat culprit. Well, Sister Hitler pounced on that kid in a single bound. With the speed of Floyd Mayweather, she rained open-handed blows to his face. It was fucking scary. It was not easy to watch. Then she grabbed a fistful of his hair, yanked him out of his seat into the hall, and dragged him all the way to the principal's office, where I'm sure she and Sister Stalin tag-teamed him. Did I feel bad for him? Not really. He was a goddamn amateur and a copycat. Too bad for him that she hadn't bothered to wonder why, this time, the chalk and erasers were in plain sight in an otherwise empty trash can. That kid's face looked like somebody had pushed a hornet's nest over his head. He was suspended from school for a week. I didn't pull any more sabotage on that particular nun, and I never told anyone of my achievement until I was in high school. By that time, I was big enough to kick her ass if she came after me, I think. I did a trilogy of episodes that was riddled with fantastic and true feats of sabotage. It was entitled Vengeance is Ours, and you can find it beginning in the March 2017 tab at thatlarryshow.com. I think you'll dig it. But there's an evolving sea change in the world of sabotage, because until fairly recently, sabotage entailed fucking up systems, usually, what, political or military, as a way to undermine the power of the people running those systems. But now sabotage has turned a corner. As machines become our overlords, people are starting to fight back. Like this story from England about workers sabotaging and assaulting workplace robots in an attempt to stop them taking their jobs. It's a common science fiction depiction of the future, right? Artificial intelligence overthrows the human race. But the theme goes back a long way to simpler times like John Henry, that legend, right? Which may have been based in fact. That big steel-driving man who could bang holes in a rock with a sledge so they'd slip the dynamite in, but then some smart guy whipped up a steam-powered drill to do his job. There was a contest, and John Henry won, but he died of a heart attack because he literally worked himself to death. Only creeps root for machines. Who doesn't want to terminate the Terminator? So these English workers have found their own ways of stopping the robots' rise to world domination. I'm heartened to know, though, that we Yanks were first in the race to rat-fuck the machines. You may recall the patrolling security robot found drowned in a Washington, D.C. office fountain under mysterious circumstances. Well, of course, the company that manufactured the robot claimed that it slipped. Do you buy that? I don't. It seems business assholes, same as academic assholes, always have to come up with cutesy-poo names for their disasters. The new one is Cobots. How nice. How kumbaya.
Hey, Mike, you want to have lunch?
Maybe tomorrow. I'm hanging with my cobot today.
One British company that employs robots requires the humans to carry robot colleagues out of the building on their shoulders when the fire alarm sounds. Whoa. Right, good luck with that. Hoist a pile of nuts and bolts onto your back as you flee a burning building. What are these idiots thinking? Those workers will be chaining those cobots to the pipes to ensure their immolation. Estimates say that about 1.7 million manufacturing jobs have been lost to robots, about 400,000 of them in Europe. The report also predicts that 20 million people will have been replaced by the machines in the workplace by 2030. Ooh, I see a lot of potential for offshoot businesses here. How about some robot-killing kits, huh? Small cans of Teflon spray rendering floors slicker than greased ice? How about a device like a spear gun, but instead of a projectile, it shoots a cast net that will immobilize your favorite cobot? Jamming devices would be great. Something the size of an old flip phone, switch it on, point it at Robbie, watch him walk into walls. Monofilament fishing line makes great people or robot tripwire. I bet even shaving cream over their sensors would put them out of commission. Now let's not forget Louisville Sluggers and ball peen hammers. Soon, cobots will need bodyguards. But they'll have to be human, won't they? Or will robocops become a reality? Well, they already are in some places, but doesn't seem they're very effective. The human spirit, fueled by the thirst for freedom, will always triumph over the assholes who try to control us with their software, their devices, whatever. There isn't a safe that can't be cracked, a lock that can't be broken, or a Hitlerian educator that can't be goaded into snapping. I guess I was luckier than Randall McMurphy. But then, Sister Hitler didn't have muscle-bound orderlies, straitjackets, or shock treatments in her toolbox. And all that suppression gave me a lifelong distaste for groupthink, as well as wariness and contempt for all power structures. They all work pretty much the same way. So at my kids' schools, now they use whiteboards and markers. When I visited on parents' nights, I actually had to restrain myself from collecting those markers, and hey, old habits die hard. Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. There will be a new bonus episode dropping soon, available only on Patreon. What's Patreon? Well, that's where dozens of special episodes await only you, Patreon members, along with signed books, custom recordings, and more. Just slide over to patreon.com/thatlarryshow and see for yourself. Follow the show on Twitter and Facebook. Just plug That Larry Show, not The Larry Show, That Larry Show, into the search bar and you'll find it. And so, my friends, whatever be your situation, at work or school or at the Moose Lodge, if you are considering sabotage to put a bug up somebody's ass, be careful, be crafty, and have a good lawyer on speed dial, because times have changed. But most of all, have fun. I'll see you next Tuesday or thereabouts, and until that time, take no shit.